Oh, excuse the short interlude there. I've got all sorts of challenges here on the home front that are beyond the scourge of Islam. So that you know what I'm dealing with is I live in a, we currently are bicoastal, trying to sell both houses, so we're no longer bicoastal, but we have a home in the central coast of California that we're trying to sell, that the local water district have become like the Gestapo, and we're allocated only 25% of the water, sometimes as little as 20% of the water that we used during the same period a year ago. And the property, as you might expect, is well landscaped. And there's no way to keep it alive with the water that we are allocated. And if you go over the allocation, the fines are gargantuan. And so we're bringing in water trucks, trying to do everything we can to keep the landscape alive while we try to sell the home and bring in water storage tanks and then retrofit the irrigation so that it'll run off a water truck as opposed to the city water. And so I've had teams here all day today and constantly throughout the week trying to deal with the water district. And in this particular case, you know, they are unreasonable. If you have a certain size lot, has nothing to do with what you used last year, you're just given an allocation, and the allocation isn't enough to keep anything alive. And so you lose all your trees, you lose all your shrubs, you lose everything. And so that's the situation that we find ourselves in. I'm trying to do everything we can, even at considerable cost, to resolve the problem. And this is part of the New World Order. The kinds of people that manage water districts are very typically liberal environmentalists. And they would view water as a precious resource as opposed to looking at it as from reality. There's exactly as much water on the planet now as there was 3 billion years ago. Water is simply a matter of distribution. And so rather than spending money on militaries breaking things, if we spent money on aqueducts distributing water more intelligently, we wouldn't have this problem. But they're not interested in the retention of water, which you could do by dredging out the dry parts of reservoirs now, or by better distribution of water. They're only interested in restricting a person's ability to use water. And it's water now. Someday it'll be gas for your car. Someday it'll be food. Someday it will be your ability to move about the country, be restricted. Someday it'll be what you're allowed to buy, where you're allowed to buy it, what you're allowed to keep of your income. They will continue to control, and they do so gleefully. And they will continue to fine and rob and get people to surrender to their control. And so I am facing, in my own small way, one part of what will be an ongoing deprivation of freedom, of rights, of benefits that you're more than willing to pay for, but you won't even be allowed to do that. And, of course, it's all part of a myth, in this case, of global warming. And we know that we came out of the last cooling period with the Little Ice Age. It was so devastating to Europe. We came out of it in around 1850 to 1875, and these cycles average about 500 to 600 years long. So we are 150 years into a warming cycle. But there is something very odd happening in the midst of this warming cycle, which is for the last 16 years, the Earth has actually cooled. And so man is actually contributing now to global cooling as opposed to global warming. That's why they've changed the rhetoric to climate change, because the climate is always changing. But it will get more severe. It's not because of man's doing. It really is dependent on the global cycles, universal cycles, the cycles of our solar system, the cycles of the sun, the Earth's orbit, its rotation around its axis. All of these things are major contributors to the periods of warming and cooling. And the reason that global warming initially, and now it's climate change, is being promoted and perpetrated is just as I'm now having water restricted, they want to restrict your ability to make a carbon footprint. So the use and purchase of gasoline and electricity all play into that, and they will all be rationed, and there will be penalties, fines for using them, and then a distribution of those fines to enrich temporarily dependents who will support their confiscation of wealth and property from others. It is the world we're headed to. That's why in that last segment I wanted to add, and I will add it now, that if Islam did not exist, if Islam was already resolved and the scourge had been removed from the planet, the world would continue to devolve. Man would destroy mankind. That Islam isn't the only foe. There is an economic foe at foot that has destroyed the currencies, destroyed economies, and we're just living really on the last gasp of illusion as it relates to our economies, and we're going to experience economic collapse that will make 1929 look like a hiccup. And it is in our immediate future. I can't tell you if it's 5 years away, 10 years, or 15 years away, but within the next 15 years, we're going to have an absolute and utter collapse economically. And that would occur with or without Islam. And, of course, then there's this great scourge of political correctness, of rendering an entire generation incapable of rational thought, unwilling to be judgmental, incapable of being judgmental, and of changing its moral compass so that north is now south, good is now bad, bad is now good. And with the vast majority of people medicated, drugged, indoctrinated, incapable of thinking on their own, being rational, even if there wasn't an economic crisis afoot, even if there wasn't an Islamic assault and plague afoot, just a dumbing down of the general population of the world so that it now responds to indoctrination as opposed to evidence and reason would be enough to destroy mankind as we exist, because we become overly susceptible to dictators and to plots and to conspiracy and to the destruction of humankind. So all of those things are afoot. Any one of the three would destroy us. The horizon for our continued existence is, you know, is a matter of less than 20 years on the outside from any of these things. God's told us as much. That's why he has told us that he's going to return in year 6,000 yon, has provided countless prophecies that tell us how horrible this planet is going to get prior to his return, that if he did not return in year 6,000 yah, 2033, on our pagan calendars, that we would destroy ourselves. And the last 3 years, from 2030 through 2033, it's the hell on earth is going to be unimaginable. And it's going to get really bad between now and then. But those last 3 years will be unfathomable in terms of the level of destruction, death, carnage, corruption that will exist on this planet. And that is why there really is only one option. Jihad. You can't save your country. You can't save your favorite region or slice of the country. It's over, folks. Genuinely, totally, completely over. The battle has been lost. Was lost a long time ago, and it can't be fixed. There is no response that's going to resolve these problems for any collective institution or nation. At this point, there is only individual salvation, and it is found single file by walking to God along the seven-step path that he has provided, by getting to know him and engaging in his Torah relationship as those things are provided, the guidance for doing so in his Torah. That's all you have. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's more than enough. It is more than satisfactory. It will provide everything that you and your family need. God is extraordinarily generous, approachable, kind, enlightening, uplifting, empowering. He is the answer to every question that's important to ask, and he provides the answer. But you need to turn to him. And in turning to him, you need to understand that he is an opponent of every religious creed, of every political mantra. God is not an advocate of democracy. He is not a Republican. He is most certainly not a Christian. He does not have a church. God is not an advocate of Judaism, nor is God ever been involved, or will he ever be involved, in Islam. The God that created the universe is overtly opposed to religion and politics. His plan, his involvement with humankind, is to remove those things from us, to remove us from those things. That's why the story of the Exodus mirrors the path that we walk to him. To affirm what I'm talking about in terms of water, now water is not only being rationed, but heavily penalized. I had a contractor here this morning. The house has computerized systems, and was here doing some work on the computerized systems for the home, and you saw the water truck here and how we're trucking in water to keep things alive, and he had come this morning from a home where the past month the homeowner was paid a bill for, normally we'd pay about $1,000 a month for their water, paid a bill of $30,000 for their water, and then on top of that was penalized, fined $300,000. So their monthly water bill was $330,000. Of that, $329,000 was really fines and excess fees, and about $1,000 of it was actually for water. Imagine that. Now, as I'm talking, the governor of the state of Minnesota just declared Minnesota a disaster area because of flooding. Our other home is in Virginia. Virginia normally gets just under 4 feet of water per year. This year, gotten 8 feet. The problem in Virginia is excess water. You look at Colorado and all of the devastation that occurred as a result of flooding in Colorado. It's not a shortage, it's a distribution. The same thing is true with energy. There's plenty of oil and gas, plenty of coal, plenty of hydroelectric power capability, plenty of ability to generate electricity from wind, from water, from gas, from oil, from coal, even from uranium. It's really just a matter of where do you put your resources, what are you willing to do, how are you going to extract and then generate power. And those that are in control of government want control over everyone. And one way they can do it is if they can control how much power you can have. Change your every aspect of your life, where you can travel, what you can see online, what you can read, how you live. So my experience today with water, as I struggle with it, and, you know, I apologize for the periods where you listen to a little bit of music, but the struggle that I have today with water will be all of our struggles with every resource. They wish to control everyone's lives. And they're inept policies are having any huge effect, but it's beyond just being inept. It's prioritization. They'd rather spend money on police to enforce their control, on armies to enforce their control, on programs that are entitlements to solicit support from the masses. They would rather do that. They would rather subsidize education so they can continue to indoctrinate and dumb people down, where people think they are smart and yet they become irrational, incapable of exercising good judgment. I know I'm a guy that poo-poos conspiracy, and I do when it's, you know, stories of chemtrails and 9/11, because the fact is, folks, they're idiotic. But when it comes to the elitists, those in government, the highest level in world corporate business, banking, religious authorities, and military leaderships, the media worldwide, that while they aren't necessarily in cahoots, they're all marching to the same music. And it's empowering themselves over the masses, controlling the masses, enriching themselves while depriving others of wealth. And it is a catastrophe. And that the intersecting lines of what Islam is doing to the world, of what economic malfeasance is doing to the world, and what being dumbed down so that people no longer are capable of thinking is doing to the world. And it all is intersecting to the point where by 2026, the world will be a very different place. By 2030, you won't even recognize it. And by 2033, it will be all over. There is but one place you can turn, one reliable answer, one place that can actually protect the only thing that you have of value, which is your soul. Yahweh has the answer. He created it. He can restore it. And He has offered you a plan that you can rely on for that very purpose. We'll be back after the break. So you should recognize and acknowledge this day your God, turning your heart to Him, because Yahweh, He is Almighty God in the heavens and the spiritual realm above the earth. There is no other. You should closely examine and carefully consider His clearly communicated and inscribed prescriptions that enable you to be cut into the covenant relationship, as well as the terms and conditions of the binding covenant contract, which relationally I have instructed and guided you this day. Because as a result of the relationship, He will be good to you and is beneficial for you, and also for your children after you, for the express purpose of elongating your days. This is the Torah. This is the teaching and guidance which beneficially He placed before Moshe and the children of Yisrael, so that we could engage and endure with God. This is the enduring witness and the restoring testimony, the clearly communicated prescriptions of the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which God spoke to Moshe and to the children of Yisrael when He led them away from oppression and from judgment in Egypt. What do you think about them apples? Kirk, does that sound like a better alternative?
I think that's a great plan.
It's not really complicated. The plan is look to the Torah. The Torah has been placed beneficially before us. It is Yahweh's enduring witness, His restoring testimony. It contains clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do to be cut into the covenant and the means to resolve disputes so we can be perfect before God.
It's really so simple. I mean, after 6 years of studying it, I keep looking for the hard part. It's really not, it's not there.
Yeah, I'm going to. Well, I'll challenge that if I may, just a little bit, and because
you have to have the want to.
Yeah, and also it becomes easy once you develop the right perspective. Once your perspective is the same as the Torah's perspective, once you look at Yahweh as our Heavenly Father, the not only God Almighty, but the Father of the Covenant, and that His Torah is His guidance to His children so that we can all participate in the covenant family with Him. Once you come to that mindset and you recognize that He's thrown 10 parties a year for us to engage with Him so we can be welcomed into His family and into His home and be empowered and enriched by Him. Now, I'm telling you, once you get there, there is no hard part.
The one thing about your books that's so important when you accumulate all the research is that you start out with what the words actually mean, and if you can get through it and not be upset because you happen to be religious or political or whatever, then it's very easy to pick up that perspective, because once you understand what the terms are and what the words actually mean, then it's okay. Well, if that's what that means, then I've been lied to all this time. Or they're telling me at least twisting it.
Yeah.
So if that's what it means, then well, that's pretty simple. You know?
Yeah, and there I think, Kirk, what you have to have is the thing that you mentioned. You've got to have the want to, and the want to is more than just wanting to spend the time to see what the words that Yahweh shared in His Torah mean. It's also, are you willing to go where the words lead? If the words lead you, not if, but when, they lead you away from your political allegiances, from your religious affiliations. Are you willing to go where the words lead?
You know, when I first, my wife heard your program, heard you at one interview, and then she printed parts of Yada Yahweh at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yada Yahweh. And and I read, she printed it up because I'm not a very good computer person, so she printed it where I could read it. And she was reading, she was about 50 pages into it, and then when I came home, she presented it to me, and I read about 15 pages, and I stood up and threw it down on the chair, kind of angrily, because I wasn't mad what she said, I was just mad that you were right, because I knew a lot of that stuff was correct. And I said, well, if all that's correct, then everything I've been doing is wrong. You know, just so it was, but once you get through that, then I picked it up again, and I've never stopped reading. I mean, my gosh, we would read all day long in between classes. I'd come home, have lunch, read, you know. I mean, you have to really want to, I think, because we've introduced this to a lot of people. In fact, that's why I kind of called, you know, after you talked about 100 people over the years in depth, and you present this to them, you have a lot of them just totally shut down, and then we have a lot of people that can't stand it, and then we have a lot of people who, and well, not a lot, but we have a few people that actually start reading it and studying and everything, and then they just walk away because of family. You know, they don't want to give up Christmas. They don't want to give up this. They don't want to. To them.
Not willing to go where the words lead.
Right. And I don't, you know, after a while you get to where I don't know what to engage people to say without them all just shutting down. I mean, it's just everything is so. Any clues?
It's a real challenge. I think there's a reason why Yahweh said what He etched in stone in the second of the three statements on the first of those two tablets, that thousands, by closely examining and carefully considering His mitzvah, which are the terms and conditions of His covenant, will receive His mercy. And thousands, my friend, amongst billions, is one in a million. And I can tell you that based on the emails that I've received in the last 10 years and the phone calls and the like, that there are probably 1,000 people worldwide that have come to know Yahweh and have engaged in His covenant, that have walked away from politics and a religion as a result of coming to understand Yahweh's testimony. And let's be really clear about one of the points that you made. You said that you were reading my books, and I want to be really clear with our listeners.
I consider them research, you know, more than research, and you put it in order that we can study better. What you said, it's not like you came up with all this stuff. I mean,
no, I'm not rewriting a book. In fact, what I have found is that the only way that I can write any of this is I have to start with an introduction that just says, okay, here's what we're going to investigate. You know, here's the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Here's the language they are written in. Here's the letters that comprise that alphabet. Here's what they mean. Here's the nature of the verbs, the stems, the moods, the conjunctions, if you will. Here's the oldest documents we've got to look at. So we just establish a perspective. Here's what we've got to work with. And then let's just jump into it. And that's what we do. We just say, we jump right into it and say, this is what these words mean. And then the only thing that the books do beyond providing a translation that enables you to go on your own and translate and to think and study is that I've got a little bit of the what I would call the Dode syndrome. Dode, of course, is the actual name for the fellow that is called David. And what David would do is he would look at these words that Yahweh shared with us in his Torah, and then he would think about them, and then he would write songs that explain his understanding of these words and what we ought to focus on, what the benefits are, what it means to us. And so I've got a little bit of that syndrome. I can't just read and translate for readers Yahweh's testimony without sharing what it means. You know, and so that really is the totality of the books. It's here's what God said in the original language, and this is what it means.
But it opens up comments if you're doing it with someone. I've been fortunate enough that my wife and I are on the same page.
Yes.
So we can talk. She can be reading because she's a fast reader, mm-hmm. and I'm slow and methodical. So
I'm like you. I'm slow and methodical.
Yeah, I read the same thing over and over and over again. Now, wait a minute. What's that?
Yeah, me too.
She would be ahead of me in all our readings to begin with, and then she would say, okay, now let's think about what I'm just reading here, and I would say the same thing. So it was quite, and always is, just tremendous fun. We do it on the Friday night when we join you also. Mm-hmm. And y'all are talking, and we're looking, and try to read along mm-hmm. material if we have the material that you were discussing mm-hmm. handy. So it should be a joy for any family, I would think.
That's Yah's point of view. He says, this is good for your children. This is beneficial for you and for your kids. He said it in this passage we just read from Devarim, Deuteronomy, which is the last book of the Torah. He says it over and over again. It is... That's the part, I guess, that is the biggest challenge for me, Kirk, and I sense it is true for you. Once you embrace what God's saying, once you say, I really like him. I really like God. He's really approachable and likable, and I appreciate what he's offering, and I accept what he's offering, and you engage with him, it is so rewarding, so empowering, so enlightening, so uplifting, that you can't imagine why anyone and everyone wouldn't want the same thing.
Or even read about it.
Even find out about it. At least consider the invitation.
Read it. Tell me I'm a liar. I throw that out at him. I say, go tell me so. If I'm wrong, I'd like to know I'm wrong. Or if it's wrong, correct me. And they just don't do that.
Yeah, one of the things that you said is that that you read a while and then you threw the manuscript of one of the chapters down. Yeah, and you weren't mad at me for pointing out what God said and how contrary what God said is to everything that maybe you had believed in the past, religiously and politically. You weren't really mad at me. What you were mad at is having been deceived, because what you recognize. Yeah, you recognized, that's also true. And it's by the way, I'm right here with you. I'm a participant in this, And so your first is you're angry at all of those people who took your money as part of a religious or political institution who have deliberately lied to you, and you're angry at being lied to, and the fact that they're continuing to lie to people. And the next is you're frustrated that you were so easily beguiled, that you're so easily played for a fool, because really all these books do, in addition to saying, here's what God said. This is why what God said is contrary to religious or political beliefs and what it means as it relates to you, your soul, and your family and your relationship with him. It is uncompromising. I found God to be uncompromising. And so rather than try to provide some justification for some religious twist, it just puts it all right there and said, this is where the weirds lead. Are you willing to accept God's testimony as he shared it with us? Are you really willing to get to know him as those words reveal his nature? Are you willing to go where the words lead? And as you said, challenge people. Go find out something here that is untrue.
Yes.
You know, nobody has. I've never in 12 years had a single person
come back with a debate, you know.
Ever. Be back in a moment. Hey, Kirk, your challenge is interesting. You know that over the past 10 years, I've had tens of millions of people that have come upon either Prophet of Doom or YadaYah.com or Questioning Paul or now IntroToGod.org. Over that time, I've never had anyone that has effectively refuted anything that I've written. I've had tens of thousands of challenges to Prophet of Doom, but never one that said, here's what you wrote, and here's what's actually true. You have an errant translation. You can't do that with Prophet of Doom, because I use five different translations and the five most respected translations, and I often share them side by side. So there is literally no approach that a Muslim can bring against Prophet of Doom that can undermine it, because I use the most credible translations, and I'm only citing the five most credible Islamic sources. But then you look at YadaYah. I've had it up now for 10 years. Do you know how many letters I've had from people worldwide who have said, what you've written here is inaccurate, your translation is inaccurate, or your conclusion is inaccurate? You know how many people over 10 years on YadaYah?
Well, I'm sure there's someone that's going to say that because they say, because my Bible says this, but I mean, not as far as going back to their original roots. And I don't know how you could dispute that.
Actually, none. Not a single person.
Really?
No,
really?
Yeah. No, you know, I get hundreds of emails a week. Not a single person. With Questioning Paul, do you know how many people have read, and I've received indirectly a couple of letters of somebody that got a third of the way through the first chapter, and then started spewing Paul's quotations to say that, you know, this is inconsistent with what Paul says, they'll have a conniption fit, but because they only got a third of the way through the first chapter, and it's a 1,200-page book. But aside from a couple of those where people didn't read it, people who have actually read Questioning Paul, would you like to ponder a guess as to how many have challenged it? Have said, you know, you're wrong for the following reasons?
I don't think they can.
None. Not a single person.
Along those lines, when you started writing it the first time, or I'm not even sure whether you had it all written, but you were debating it on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Discovered this and so forth, and the guy from New Zealand and so forth.
Yeah.
And I talked to someone about that.
Yes.
And I actually wrote him a letter. I said, this is why Paul can't be...
Right.
We have proposed he does.
Right.
And I shared some of that, plus of some thoughts of my own, and presented it to this young lady who was heading off to a religious school.
Mm-hmm.
And her father came by, and he couldn't challenge anything I said either, but he just said, my daughter can't be around you.
Right.
I mean, she was working for me in a school, art school.
Yeah, I hear it all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was just dumbfounded that he wouldn't even read it. And I said, well, why don't we study it together? Why don't you read it? And then challenge me. It's okay. I'm not offended.
Right.
And, you know, if you were a Buddhist, I don't care.
Yeah, in fact, if you can show me where I've mistranslated, in fact, in questioning Paul.com, there are six translations for every verse. You know, I've got the actual Greek, I've got the Latin Vulgate, I've got the King James, I've got the New International Version, and I've got the most credible interlinear for every single verse, plus my own translation.
I have a 150-year-old Greek translation that's literal, and then it has the column over there, the Dugon, or probably not a polyglot, but a Dugon or something. And I have it over here in it where they redo it, and it is... Extremely, I mean, you're right on the money on that one. I mean, just about everything. It's very few little deviations of anything, you know. So, and I had Greek friends. I could always go to them and ask them, what does that word mean? And they would tell me it's rather...
Right. And so, and There's one person that never wrote me, but had a conniption fit that said, well, Paul didn't write Galatians, even though he claims to have written it. And even though it's
who wrote it?
Yeah, and my point was, so let's pretend for a moment that he didn't write Galatians. And what of these books did he write, by the way? And then they'll say, well, he wrote one of the Corinthians, but not both of them. One of the Thessalonians, but not both of them. He might have written Romans, but not Ephesians. And you get into, okay, let's pretend that's true. That means that half of your Christian New Testament, you need to throw it out because you don't have any clue who.
Right.
And since it claims that he did it, if he really didn't do it, it can't be trusted. But beyond all that, doesn't matter who wrote it. It's just untrue. Regardless if Paul wrote it or Gertrude wrote it, it's factually untrue. It's rationally untrue. It's inconsistent with the very God that they claim inspired the author of those letters. And, well, Kirk, you're right. It's just a shame that we can't get more people to be open to the truth.